CPS. Go. Inco. Go. PUS. Go. Surgeon. Go. Booster. Go. Copy that. We have a go from you guys.
This is Talking Sound.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Talking Sound Podcast. I am Chris Jordan, your host. This is the only podcast on the internet where negative 10 is a number to be desired. We are coming to you live from Austin, Texas today with a good friend from Portland, Maine area, Rowan Bishop of Bridge Street Design and Garage Mahal Studios. How are you doing today, Rowan?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Doing great. It's been awesome just sitting here for the last 20, 30 minutes or so and just kind of catching up. We see each other on social media all the time. We still take part in conversations in that way. But I've known you for, it doesn't really seem like 15 years or so.
15 years. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. Like it just blows my mind sometimes. Like, number one, how long I've been home from Portland, Maine. And number two, how long I lived there and like the relationships that I built and cultivated that people I still keep in touch with, like yourself, who are amazing artists, not only musically themselves, but, artists in other rights and help to bring other artists' vision to fruition. And that's one reason I wanted to have you on the show, is to talk to you about what it is to work with people, not only in the design realm as a designer, as a graphic designer, but as far as a studio artist and a studio engineer working with musicians. Let's get into a little bit of design first. How did you get into design, Rowan? What was it that brought you into that realm?
I was working as a recording engineer in New York City in the early 90s, and it was not going too well money-wise. The pay was just not enough to live on.
What?
It's true. It was really, when you're new, it's incredibly hard to get established in that town.
You weren't making Rick Rubin money?
No. I was making intern money. So at the same time, I was playing in a band. Nobody in the band was making flyers, and flyers were really important in terms of marketing your band. You'd flyer the neighborhood. So I said, looks like it's another thing I'm going to have to do. So I went down to the art supply store and I got those rub-on letters and, clipped things out of magazines and started making flyers.
Sure.
And started getting compliments. And then other bands started asking me to do flyers for them. So I'm like, and at the same time, all the art schools in Manhattan were advertising like new career, graphic design. And so I'm thinking like, this might be a good move. So I took some classes and I bought a Macintosh and, Photoshop and Quark Express to, bring back some memory.
Oh, yeah. Quark Express.
Apparently they're still around.
Yeah.
It just went from there, and I worked at various places in, the New York City area. Then my wife and I moved to Boston. I worked there, and then we moved to Portland. And I worked at a place here in Portland, and I got cut. They had a slow period, so they cut some people. They cut me. They cut the sales manager, and it was nothing nothing to do with your work. Your work is fine. We need to slim down. And so my wife said, "Well, this is your big opportunity to hang out your shingle." And within a week, I had old clients of mine calling me. So I'm like, okay, I guess I'm freelance now. And I am.
And how has that worked out for you? Because, I mean, it's interesting. Whenever I first moved to Austin, because I got engaged to my wife, and the first words in my business model were mobile audio and video. I was like, you have a day job. You can't leave that. So let me move my business to Austin. And it was a little odd at first. There was a little bit of conflagration between us because, I was at home most of the time. I would go out and do gigs like 3-4 days a week. And she was locked down to a desk. But when she finally made the switch, much like yourself, much like myself as a freelancer, where it was just kind of forced upon you, And it was like, well, I guess this is now what I do. It was hard for her at first to get into the mindset of being a freelancer and the fact that, you know, it was up to her to go out and find that, to cultivate those relationships, to make that kind of stuff happen. How did you make that transition?
I was very lucky. At my last job, the owner insisted that the clients talk directly to the people producing the work. Because normally, you know, it all goes through an account executive and it gets filtered through somebody. And, which is not surprising because creatives are not very diplomatic. Yeah. But this job experience I had forced me to kind of put myself in the shoes of the client and realize, what am I doing for the client? I am taking a problem off their back. They want to know that they have something they've got to get done that they can't do themselves. And they want to know that I've got their back. That's exactly what it is.
Yep.
And it was a surprisingly good transition. If I had still been in the New York area, it might not have been. But because, you know, Maine is kind of a mellow place, comparatively speaking, it was easy. And everybody I work with are just nice, considerate people who understand, you know, what they do and what I do and how it all works together. And it's been really good. I occasionally have a bad client.
Sure.
And I've found over time the bad clients, I never make any money off them because I'll get paid for my work, but they're so unorganized and inconsiderate of people's time that I never hear from them again, which is fine by me.
Yeah. 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 It really does kind of work itself out where those kind of clients, that kind of stuff, really does just kind of become one-off. After a while, like we all kind of have to put up with it as the growing pains of a business. Yeah. You know, I had to put up with it myself. And it's interesting that you were bringing up, Portland, Maine specifically in the right of, starting a business, because I started HC Productions in Portland, Maine, you know, literally selling, live recordings to bands that I was working with, things like that. And, I found it very interesting because Portland, A, is a very supportive community to begin with just about everybody. So when any business starts up, it's one of those like, oh, hey, have you seen that new business over on, you know, up over on Commercial? You know, like everybody hears about the new business. Yeah. And people always want to at least go check it out and see what it's about. So, it's very supportive in that, right? And I've told numerous people like, hey, if you specifically want to start like a customer based business like that, go to somewhere like Portland, Maine. Cause if you can succeed there in that market to begin with, that is, you know, seasonal in and of itself, but there's about, I don't know, when I lived there, maybe 30, 40,000 people. A fairly small but dense population. And it was just one of those that I think metrically it works out really well, especially with winter. Cause man, if you can make it business wise through a Maine winter, like you got something, you're going to be all right.
It's like, I will say this. It is no coincidence that my slow periods are January and July.
Yeah.
July because everybody's up to camp.
Yep.
January because everybody's just staying inside. It's too cold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And much like myself, now that I'm in the corporate AV field, my slow seasons are the beginning of summer and Christmas time. Because imagine that when kids are out for summer break or Christmas break, executives don't want to be on a week-long business trip.
Yeah.
So you do kind of have to learn that ebb and flow of a market and how to deal with clientele. What was it that I guess you were talking about doing flyers for your bands, things like that, that kind of brought you into the world of design to begin with? And of course, going and taking classes that were, of course, digitally design based. What do you use now as far as equipment for design? Are you a tablet and pen user? You know, smart board, anything like that? Or are you still mouse and keyboard?
Mouse and keyboard.
Okay.
Keep in mind, I am not an illustrator.
Okay.
I am not somebody with drawing and painting skills. I'm a designer, and that's a little different than what an illustrator is. So, it's been said previously that a designer takes words and pictures and moves them around on a page until they look nice. That's the simple way to put it.
Yeah, fonts, colors,
colors, continuity,
yeah.
Messaging,
branding,
et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But the simple analogy is also true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd kind of like to go from the world of design and backstep a second. I wanted to talk about design first because, I've been wanting to talk to graphic designers, photographers, things like that in relation to, music, marketing, that kind of stuff. And you yourself are someone who is a musician, a recording engineer, you own a studio, you do design work, and I know you've done album designs, things like that. So, as you are preparing to work with a musician, with a band, and embark on a project with them, number one, what are some of the things that you're looking for, not just musically, but I guess graphically, you know, like what kind of concepts are you looking for the band to come to you with to start off with? You know what I mean?
Are you talking about in terms of designing?
Well, in terms of design and studio work, like as a band comes to you, like what are the things that you're kind of looking for to be like, okay, are these guys ready to take on this project right okay. now?
That's a good question. In terms of design work, most people have something already thought out to a certain degree, meaning that they have some pictures that they like. They've written out all the text they want, which is usually too much. And I have to tell them to pare it down. And so they got that and they just say, okay, this is the materials we've got to give you. Have at it. And sometimes I will, you know, say like, oh, that picture they wanted for the back cover would make a much better front cover. So I'll diplomatically, you know, change things around, because they're hiring me to use my expertise in this field. So sometimes their ideas are great and sometimes they're not so great. And I have to diplomatically gently push them in what I think is the right direction.
Yeah.
And I always close it with, you know, if you don't like it, I can easily change it back to what it was.
Sure.
It's true. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you can always do it the concept of like showing them their idea and them showing them a couple of other versions, you know, like, hey, here's another couple that I worked up that I think maybe express things a little bit better.
That is one way to handle it.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to let's kind of go through the process of building an album and how you work with musicians going through that process.
Well, they'll come over, they'll see the studio, we'll talk about how they want to record. I kind of encourage them to record, you know, all in the same room. For a variety of reasons, which you know what those reasons are.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes they do that. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they record in a really ridiculous way that's never going to work. And I tell them that. And if they don't listen, I have to adopt they'll learn the hard way attitude. You know, I don't push people
yeah.
or I don't insist on things. I just say like once or twice, there's really a better way to do this. But then it's their decision to listen to me or not to.
And I know you're like you were just saying your preferred way is to have people all play together in the same room. I'm the same way. I think that eye contact, that fully live feeling and being there is something totally different. And you really capture something much more pure than, okay, let's take our drum tracks from this studio onto this studio on the road and do some guitar licks over it. You know, I find that to be somewhat of a cold process. How frequently is it, do you find that, you are recording musicians all in the same room at the same time?
I'd say the majority of the time, but not, I couldn't tell you really a percentage, but the majority of the time it's all live, except for vocals. I always overdub vocals.
Okay. But, yeah. You can always go in and, you know, thicken up the drums and put additional drum lines in. You can go in and double guitars, you know, do reamping, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know myself, I'm very much a plugs and wires guy. I do not do a lot of in-the-box mixing in my home studio and in my work. Which realm do you prefer, Rowan, there at Garage Mahal recording?
Yeah. Well, I have my feet in both camps. The out-of-the-box part is that I have a 32-channel Midas analog board.
Nice.
And so that's the front end. It's also the queuing system and the analog summing, which I'm a big believer in. But the rest of it happens in the box. And interestingly, I really wanted to go analog at one point, maybe a year ago. I was actually looking at it, analog tape deck, multi-track tape decks on Reverb and eBay. And so, okay. but I could not find when I would talk, you know, ask or when client, well, I'll give you an example, you know, people would call me up and say, like, can you record on tape? And I'd say things like, you know, like, I can. I do not have a deck at the moment, but I can. And the more they talked about it, once they found out how much tape costs, that would end any interest in recording on tape.
Yeah, I personally do have a tape deck. I've got a nice little 7-inch reel here at my house, and fortunately have a box of blank tape. That I came across years ago, some Ampex, some old Scotch. It's interesting even just to hear, the difference between the brands and the, you know, the material on the tape itself and the way that audio comes out. One thing I did frequently, I had the same deck just before I left Maine. And one thing I was doing was actually doing, analog bounce downs, where people would bring me their digitally produced album and I would basically send it through reamping, you know, through analog pre's, tube pre's, and then send it out to the reels off the record head, off tape, and then back out to digital. And that was great. It was fantastic. But yeah, most people don't understand the expense and the tedium of recording to tape.
It
really does get expensive rapidly, which is a lot of the times why it's like, okay, if you would like to track drums and vocals on tape, great.
Yeah, and guitars or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, something that once again you can sum down, that you don't have to use like all 32 channels and you aren't trying to record the whole thing, unless you're going Alan Parsons Dark Side of the Moon style and we're just going to do this whole thing on one reel, guys. Is that cool?
Yeah.
And go. But yeah, it is a totally different process. I myself, I guess, just using things the way I do, I'm very much commit to the mix. I whenever I put a reverb on my keyboards and any music I make or anything, that's the reverb I want. I'm not going through and putting it in post, that kind of stuff. To me, my digital rig at home is very much akin to just a large digital 4-track.
that's one way to look at it.
Yeah. And, but, I still have, for some reason, suites and plugins and all kinds of stuff because I have friends that are on the road. I recently had a friend of mine that came into town to sing for Beto O'Rourke running for Congress here. And he was like, man, I got to remix a track. You know, anybody knows somewhere that I could get some cheap studio time? And I was like, cheap studio time? Just come to my studio, dude. Like, just come by my house. Yeah. We'll take care of you. Don't even worry about it. And we sat here and we chopped up his song and mixed it down and did all kinds of stuff like within an hour or so and tracked some real quick backing vocals for him to sing over live. It was pretty bootstrap. And, you know, like I hadn't done stuff like that to that kind of level in quite a while. And it felt good to be like, hey, yeah, I can still hop in there and like hack my way through the weeds of a mix and, you know, do that kind of stuff. How often are you moving into the 32 track realm with your mixes and with your recordings there at Garage Mahal?
You know, fairly often, all of them. Yeah. So it's, keep in mind that like eight of them are being used as effect sends. And return.
Okay. Okay.
So there's that. And then, you know, instruments max out around, I'd say 18 tracks maybe. But then the vocals start to fill up the rest. And I have to, a lot of times I'll have to just group, like backing vocals, I'll just send them all to a stereo pair on the board. Mm-hmm. So I'm only dedicating two tracks to the myriad of backing vocals, that sort of thing.
Oh, okay.
So I have I gang them up sometimes. I don't when I can avoid it, but with backing vocals, it's usually, you know, people love to record things that they're not good at, like backing vocals.
There are professional backup vocal singers, folks. That is what they do. How often, whenever you're working, especially with bands on a budget, things like that, are you bringing in other musicians outside of the band? Are you recommending it? You know, how often does that kind of stuff happen?
Not very often, because I usually work with a complete group. I actually just finished mixing a project that was built from the ground up. And, you know, we made a demo with Easy Drummer. Then we had a real drummer come in and redo the drums, and a bass player came in. I did all the guitars. And, then they hired a pianist for one song and a cellist for another song. And
okay.
So, yeah. And that can work out really well. I mean, the drummer that I like to work with is he's incredible. He can he can do anything.
Who is it?
It's Runt from By Blood Alone.
Oh wow! All right.
He doesn't even live around here anymore.
Really?
Yeah, he lives in Massachusetts.
Oh wow! And
like Western Massachusetts, but he comes up for sessions, you know, occasionally when I need him.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. And, you know, and that's actually where I met you was in the band By Blood Alone. Y'all played my club regularly. You were a regular fixture down at the L House.
Yeah. I miss that place a lot.
Me too. It was a great little hideaway from what was regular Portland. It had its own little subculture every night of the week. It was very interesting.
Damn, now, that hotel across the street with no sense of fun.
I know, right? I remember the day that we had to build the plugs for the windows.
I remember you going out there with your meter all the time.
I knew the police by first name. I remember one night I had an old Saab, and I remember one night driving home, and I got pulled over in a neighborhood because my muffler was too loud. Whenever I got pulled over, it was one of the cops that always came by and did the sound readings at the club, and he was like, "Really, Chris? You aren't even at work right now." I was like, come on, man. I'm just trying to get home. I'll get my muffler fixed. Leave me alone. But it was a very interesting culture up there as far as bands and music. It was a rich, rich culture of bands and music up there. And what's interesting is it was, pardon the term, but a very incestuous culture of bands and music.
Oh, yeah.
People crossed over in bands and people crossed over in genres. And, you know, it's still very interesting whenever I look at bookings and billings going on around town where it's like, wow, that's awesome. It's a very eclectic mix of music coming from up there. And I'm very happy to see a lot of bands like Lyle Davinsky and Motet touring the country now. The industry I really did kind of turn there for a little while. And there were quite a few bands from around that area that kind of came to a little bit of acclaim and had some spots.
Yeah.
So it's been fantastic to, number one, be a part of that culture and to see it grow and continue as I've left and to kind of keep track of it from a distance. What do you see happening right now around the music scene and the recording scene in the Austin area or Portland area?
Well, keep in mind something, that I'm now 51 years old and I don't go out. I don't go out. I don't. It's just like, it's really hard to get me to go anywhere.
Yeah. I'm about the same way.
Yeah. So, you know, the drill.
If you would like to pay me to come to a show and do some work, I will gladly come to your show and do some work.
Yeah. Although I have just started playing another band, so I am getting out a little bit, actually, now.
Oh, wow.
That's
awesome. We'll have to talk about that in a second.
We'll talk about that. So this is what I see. I see, and this is kind of on the negative side, I see the rising rents in Portland, and they've really risen, are making it tough for musicians and artists. You know, they're moving out of Portland. They're struggling to make rent. Sometimes they don't finish projects here because my rent went up. So whenever you want to finish it, I'm here. You know where I am. And so that part is not so hot. The good side is that more out of town bands are coming in. So bands and artists, you know, like the State Theater and Thompson's Point and Port City Music Hall and Aura, which replaced the Asylum, they're getting touring acts in. And even Geno's, which I haven't, like I said, I haven't been there in like 2 years. The last time I was there was for Lemmy's Memorial, and there was no band playing that night. They've got a new booking guy who's getting like national accent.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Like Anvil played there. Murphy's Law played there.
Wow.
What's that group from Baton Rouge? They were called Shell Shock many, many, many years ago. And they're notable. They're pretty notable in metal circles. So, and they got a new PA and new lighting and so they're really putting in the effort.
Good.
And that's very admirable. And so that creates opportunities for local bands, you know, kind of do the opening slot thing.
Yeah.
So in that regard, it's going well.
Good, good. Cause I mean, like I said, it was a town that fostered me, fostered my business, fostered me as an artist. It was nothing but supportive, within the community whenever I lived there. So I'm very glad to hear that, quite a bit of that is still going on, that there are still people striving to bring that music scene to life, and to make a space proper for artists to play in, not just like the corner of a cafe.
There's plenty of corners of cafes too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's much like Austin, you throw a stick and you're probably going to hit a musician playing somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's just how the numbers work out. Like I said, it was a huge community of musicians that lived up there. I remember even like our little Friday afternoon bluegrass jam circle sometimes, like we would literally run out of chairs in the bar.
Oh, really? Where was that?
Oh, that was at the Ale House years ago.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I saw any of that.
Oh, yeah. No, it happened from like 3 to 6 in the afternoon, like whenever we'd have pizza service, stuff like that. Yeah, it was always really wild because we would have this huge bluegrass group in there drinking pints and stuff like that. You know, just like 20 people on the stage jamming with instruments. And then all of a few hours later, we would have like hardcore, hard rock and metal.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like, wow, that changed rapidly.
Yeah, you'd have like, you know, Ocean and Vertigod or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it was interesting to me even whenever I moved up there, because right as I moved there, as you well know, I cut my teeth doing jam bands in the Houston area, things like that. And that's what I always loved mixing. And it was one of those, like, I heard from all the hippies in Houston, like, man, you're going to love it. The jam bands are all over the place up there. And right as I moved there was when jam bands went out and the metal and hard rock really kind of started to have the turnaround and come into the forefront.
Yeah.
And, oh my God, just to see that happen and to see some of the talent that started getting together and playing music and being on stage, bands like y'all, the Outsiders, you know,
great stuff,
up there. It was always fantastic. And even whenever I was up there not too long ago, I remember my wife's family, actually, a few of them lived down near Kennebunk, and we went up to visit a few years ago for just like a day or so. And I was like, I've got to go to Portland for the afternoon. And even then, walking around, it was still like music everywhere. You know, I want to say like Eric Betancourt was still playing over at the Lobster Shack. Yeah,
he's still around.
Oh yeah, no, he actually moved down here to Austin. He splits his time.
Yeah, yeah. He plays. You know, he's busy.
Yeah, you
know, he gets around.
Yeah, him. Thomas Metz moved down here.
Okay.
He was from Ben Micklejohn's band Hobo.
Yeah, I don't know whatever became of Hobo. You may not know this. Ben Micklejohn is one of two people outside of By Blood Alone who actually get on stage with us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He came up in oboe with us.
Yep. Yeah. He will get up and jam oboe crazy with anybody, yeah. Dude. Like, he is actually an incredible musician. I want to say now he lives up in northern Maine, and I believe he's a music teacher. If I'm not mistaken.
That would be something he would do.
Yeah. Yeah. So as we kind of wrap up here, where do you see things going? Number one, for Garage Mahal, what are some of the things that you have in the works right now? And what are you looking for in the future, just in the music industry? Where do you see things going as a musician?
That's a multifaceted question.
Thank you.
let me think here. Well, the studio, obviously, I want to keep growing. And I've gotten to the point where I don't take everything that comes along. You know, I'm a little picky about what I do. And so that's good that I can be that way. And there's just some things I just turn down because I know I can't do them. Like, I can't do hip hop. I don't know how.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
It's a totally different animal than what I do.
Yeah.
So I am courting. I'm making more of an effort to court artists that I really want to work with. You know, some of which you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm putting in the effort to kind of court them.
And, yeah.
Yeah. And the next question was, where do I think the music industry in this town is going?
Well, yeah. You know, where do you see things moving in that direction?
Well, the live scene is going to continue to grow in terms of national artists coming to Portland to play. And so that's a very good thing. In terms of local artists moving out of Portland, it depends upon what the city does in terms of rents. That's actually a really big problem in Portland nowadays.
Yeah.
Rent is out of control. And, you know, will the city kind of put something in place to level them off? Because here's the thing. It's like, and it used to be that, like, you know, let's say you lived on the peninsula, you know, you could walk to, you know, Geno's or whatever. Oh, my friends are playing on a Wednesday night. I'll just walk down the street to Geno's but now people, they're living in the burbs. They gotta drive, and then they can't drink. And so they might go on the weekends, but they won't go to that Wednesday night show. So it's kind of in an unsteady state in that regard. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. And any advice out there for people beginning to take that step as a freelancer? You know, sometimes we take the step, sometimes somebody pushes us, you know. Any advice for those folk?
In terms of just freelancing in general?
Yeah.
Okay, a couple things. Don't give away your work. Never give away your work.
Amen. Listen to this man.
You don't have to charge. You just find out what the general gamut is amongst in your field in that market. And if you're new, you charge towards the low end of it. And just over time, you increase until you're in the middle, or you're the greatest one in town and everybody knows it. And you can charge the top rate. Like I said, never, ever give away your work. Nobody wants people here free. They think, oh, it's crap.
Yeah.
So never give away your work.
Yeah. They must be working on what they're doing.
Yes. Oh, yeah. That's another thing. You can't, you know, if you have to work another job to pay the bills, do it. But don't think you're going to freelance while working a full time white collar, you know, 9-to-5 jobs, because your freelance clients will want to be able to get a hold of you at 10 in the morning. Yeah. When you're at your day job. So don't do that. If you're going to do it whole hog. And just get to know your clients personally, you know, and make them feel like you're part of their team. Whenever a client, you know, emails me about a project, I start referring to it as we, not me, not you, not them, we.
Yeah.
Like, I'm part of the team that's going to help you achieve your goal.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way to put it. Yeah. Because you definitely do. Even like I was saying before the show, when I was talking about the companies that I'm on the road with, and though it's turned into a few companies instead of the numerous companies that I worked with here in town. And you even gave me the advice at that point, like, be careful of that, you know, make sure that you're still exploring other opportunities, make sure that you're still putting other lines in the water, things like that. Yeah. And that is utterly sound advice, and it's great advice. And I've even expressed it's a culture. And the people that I'm on the road with, the companies that I've worked with for years that now have me on the road, we know each other. We know our weaknesses. We know our strengths. You know, I know what Ken is better at than Tony over here. You know, even local crews that I work with over and over again, I see those things and I know how to best utilize my labor. And it does become a, what are we going to do to get this job done? Because we all have to work together to make this happen.
Absolutely.
And one of my biggest pieces of advice for people who are considering going freelance, and it's hard in this day and age. At one point, people asked me how I came about a studio full of equipment and like equipment in my garage that I don't use that I now need to inventory because somebody asked me what I had available. And I was like, okay.
No.
So now I get to inventory some stuff before I go to Vegas in a couple of days.
Your inventory is so out of control, you don't know what it is.
Yeah, exactly. And it was like, it was literally the fact of I quit smoking and drinking out.
Yeah, well,
you that's know, good. I quit smoking cigarettes and buying 3-4 packs of butts a week. And I quit going out to drink. I'm not saying I don't drink. If I'm out, I'll have a beer or two, but I'm not like going out to drink.
Yeah, yeah, I'm going to meet my friends at a bar.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and like I'll have 2 or 3 beers, whatever, over a few hours. But I'm not going to go out and purposefully spend $60 at the bar when I could go out and spend $15 on a bottle at the liquor store.
Yeah.
And at the same time, instead of using that money for those things, use that money toward equipment. Use that money to either grow your business. I have the concept of 20% of my money should be going back to buy updated gear, to update gear, to maintain gear, stuff like that. But the only way you can get that way is to have a plan. And if you can do something as simple as that and start saving 20-30 bucks a week, and just put it aside, get to the point where you have 2 months of rent and bills stacked up.
Yeah.
And a couple of clients ready in the chute. And, you know, take some time off work. Give it 2 or 3 weeks, you know, and see what happens. You may just be surprised. I know I was forced into mine, much like you were, Rowan. And I'm not going to say I went kicking and screaming. But it was one of those like, my God, like, thank God I came back from this wedding, lost my job, and my bills for the next month and a half were paid. Because I paid them before I went off to the wedding. Yeah. And came back to no job. And I had maybe 2 or 3 gigs a week mixing at clubs. So I started calling bands that I worked with to see if they needed a private sound guy, you know, and that's when I hooked up with Nick and Project 7 and, you know, a couple other bands, and word got out that I was doing that, and that anytime I'd do that for your band, you always got a recording. And like before I knew it, I had my rent and bills paid for the next month after that.
Yeah.
And it can really happen. You do have to, A, stay positive about it, B, understand. Even businesses with an insane business plan and financial package, things like that fail. It's okay. The important thing is that you take the step, folks.
Good way to put it, that
you actively chase that dream, cause nobody's going to give it to you. You have to snatch it up and make sure that you take the advantage when it comes around. So that's my advice for freelancers is, Do your best to get out there, get after it, make sure that it happens, because you're, as I say all the time on this show, you are only as good as your last gig. The word from your last gig gets around all of these industries, be they rock and roll and local bands or design and design companies or even recording studios in a town or touring AV companies, stuff like that. It's an incestuous industry. People know people. Word gets around. You know names, that kind of stuff. So you mess one thing up in a really bad way, and it can affect you for a while.
Yeah, absolutely true.
So before we leave, Rowan, tell everybody where they can go to check out Bridge Street Design as well as Garage Mahal Recording.
Quite easy. BridgeStreetDesign.net, and it's all spelled out, and GarageMahalRecording.com, also all spelled out.
And what are a couple of the upcoming projects that you have coming out from Garage Mahal, just so people can keep their ears to the ground and to the airwaves to listen for some of this great work?
Okay. Well, I just sent an EP by Amy Thompson, who's a local singer. She lives here in the area. And, so her EP just went off to mastering. It'll be, you know, done in a few weeks, and then we'll figure out what we're going to do with the recordings, which we haven't done that part yet. And I'm working on, I'm going to start mixing the Argon Red, which is another local band that sort of have a Dinosaur Jr. Pixies kind of vibe.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's what's going on.
All right. Well, so glad to hear that things are going well for you in your world and in the world of Portland, Maine up there in the cold northeast. Make sure to go on by bridgestreetdesign.net. Make sure to go on by garagemahalrecording.com. Check out everything that Rowan does. He is fantastic. He is a great person to have in your corner creatively. Probably some of the best music I've heard in years. I still listen to, I ran across not too long ago, Rowan, a whole stack of CDs and DVDs. I need to go through and see if I don't have some By Blood Alone stuff. But I have been on a old school live alehouse tear lately of live recordings where it's like, wow, I forgot I even had these. So it has been a joy to, go down memory lane with you today and kind of pick your brain about design work and, things like that. We'd love to have you on again anytime.
Oh, that'd be great. I had a wonderful time doing this.
Absolutely. While you're online, checking out GarageMahalRecording.com and BridgeStreetDesign.net, folks, please make sure to stop on by TalkingSoundShow.com. That is where you can get not only all the episodes, but great articles from people like Rupert Neve Designs, Canon Video, all the greatest stuff from Panasonic, JVC. I want to say there's some Myers Sound on there, all kinds of just industry articles, new products coming out, things like that. If you're a freelance AV engineer like myself, we do have the Freelance AV Directory, one of the only ones on the internet that I'm aware of where you can go. It's an interactive map of the United States. You can click on your state, click on your city, and you will find companies that hire freelance AV techs. So go check that out. Get out in the industry. While you're online checking that out, make sure to check out our parent network, HCUniversalNetwork.com. Download the free app available on Android now, soon to be available on Apple. It is pending approval in the Apple market. So there you can find and get all of the latest episodes from all of the podcasts like Talking Sound Show, Yes But Why Podcast, Dudes and Beer, Scary Dad, Therapy Hour, all kinds of great stuff. Until next time, everybody, please take care of your ears, take care of each other, and keep reaching for 11. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.